नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
Read verse 26 and we'll finish the chapter because the last two verses have no purport. So we'll finish the chapter starting with 26.
Tasmat svasthena manasa vimrisha gatim atmanaha Vaite Dhruvartha Vishrambham. Chajo Pashamam Avisha. Tasmat Svastena Manasa. Vimrsha Gatim Atmanaha. Dvaite Dhruvartha Vishrambham Chajo Pashamam Avisha. Tasmat,
therefore,
Svasthena,
with a careful
Manasa,
mind.
Vimrisha,
considering,
gatim,
real position,
atmanaha,
of yourself,
dvaite,
in the duality,
dhruva,
as permanent,
artha,
object,
Vishrambham,
belief,
Tyaja,
give up,
Upashamam,
a peaceful condition,
Avisha,
take to. Translation, therefore, O King Chitraketu, carefully consider the position of the Atma. In other words, try to understand who you are, whether body, mind, or soul. Consider where you have come from, where you are going after giving up this body, and why you are under the control of material lamentation. Try to understand your real position in this way. And then you'll be able to give up your unnecessary attachment. You will be able to give up the belief that this material world or anything not directly in touch with service to Krishna is eternal. Thus, you will obtain peace. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The Krishna consciousness movement is factually endeavoring to bring human society to a sober condition. Because of a misdirected civilization, people are jumping in materialistic life like cats and dogs, performing all sorts of abominable sinful actions and becoming increasingly entangled. The Krishna consciousness movement includes self-realization. Because one is first directed by Lord Krishna to understand that one is not the body, but the owner of the body. When one understands this simple fact, he can direct himself toward the goal of life. Because people are not educated in terms of the goal of life, they are working like madmen and becoming more and more attached to the material atmosphere. The misguided man accepts the material condition as everlasting. One must give up his faith in material things and give up attachment for them. Then one will be sober and peaceful. And the last two verses, 27, 28, the great sage Narada continued, my dear king, attentively, receive from me a mantra, which is most auspicious. After accepting it from me, in 7 nights, you'll be able to see the Lord face to face.
Woo!
My dear king, last verse, in former days, Lord Shiva and the other demigods took shelter of the lotus feet of Sankarsana. Thus, they immediately got free from the illusion of duality and achieved unequaled and unsurpassed glories in spiritual life. You will very soon attain that very same position. I mean, 7 days is really fast. And then thus ends the Bhaktivinoda purports of the 6th canto, 15th chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled The Saints Narada and Angira Instruct King Chitraketu. From my studies of this canto, combined with my more recent studies with of Brahma Samhita, although our acharyas don't describe 6.1.15 as the Paribhasa Sutra of this chapter, it seems to me it is. Or maybe I'm going out on a limb. Paribhasa Sutra is sutra, we know. It's tight, compressed, packed message, sound vibration, and packed within it, within a sutra, in the case of a Paribhasa Sutra, it's the essence of, according to Jiva Goswami, in his Bhakti Sandarbha and his commentary on Brahma Samhita, it is one verse that comes towards the beginning of a text that governs, like an emperor governs so many kings, it governs so many following unrelated, apparently unrelated statements and facts. It rules over them. They are subservient to this one. And to understand any one of these things that come later, one must understand it in terms of the Paribhasa Sutra. Otherwise, you won't get the proper understanding. In Bhakti Sandarbha, in Krishna Sandarbha, he indicates that the verse 1.3.28 is the Paribhasa Sutra of Srimad Bhagavatam. It comes at the beginning. It rules the other 17,999 verses of Srimad Bhagavatam. And the essence of that verse is Eti Changsa Kalapungsang Krishnastu Bhagavan Swayam. Of all the incarnations just listed, chapter 3, Krishna Bhagavan Swayam Krishna is the origin of them all. Although he's listed in list, he's the origin of them all. And Jiva Goswami has like volumes that go through the Sanskrit of the verse and evidences and to support his declaration. That's the Paribhasa Sutra. It governs the whole Srimad Bhagavatam. If one comes to any other conclusion, boo, wrong. It must be subordinate to that verse. Krishna is the source of everything. And that's, of course, the absolute truth is that from which everything comes. Krishna is that from which everything comes. Krishna is the absolute truth. So whatever else is said, so many other things are said. So here's one of the so many other things. And in other examples, just this is in case you like verses. In Nectar of Devotion, there's a verse that's the Paribhasa Sutra of that whole work. Bhaktirasamrita Sindhu. Anyabhilashita Shunyam Jnana Karmadhyanavratam Anukunyena Krishna Anushilanam Bhakti Uttama. And in Sri Brahma Samhita, it's the first verse, Ishwara Parama Krishna, Satchit Ananda Vigraha, Anadir Adir Govinda Sarva Karna Karnam. So, oh, it's not stated in the commentary of our acharyas. To me it seems very clear that 6.1.15 is the verse, because from that verse so many things flow. That verse is Chaikachit Kevalaya Bhaktya Vasudeva Parayana Agham Dunvanti Karjneya Niharam Iva Bhaskaram, which means, for those of you that are not familiar with the verse, Kachit is a pronoun, it's referring to those who Kevalaya Bhaktya, absolute devotion, nothing else but devotion. And then similarly, Vasudeva Parayana is kind of like an echo of that Kachit Kevalaya Bhaktya. Vasudeva Parayana. Parayana. Forget the word for word synonym, but it's, there's nothing else. Nothing else. I mean, there may be so many other things, but those so many other things are connected to that one thing. That's nothing else. Just like our lives. Our lives may be according to our psychophysical nature, whatever they are. But those who are in Kevala Bhakti, those so many other things are connected to one thing. Service to Krishna. Vasudeva Parayana. And by so doing, agham sin, and even the tendency to again do such things. Dunvanti Karjneya. They're eradicated. Not only the Parabdha Karma, that which is fructifying now, and it's like you become relieved from your immediate suffering, but those things not yet fructified, and even the tendency which is being addressed in this purport, verse and purport. And the metaphor is iva, like sun dissipates fog at once. At once, not like slowly, at once. Similarly, Kevala Bhakti has that potency, like the sun, to dissipate fog at once. And the verse just preceding that, little lesson in Kathika Canto, the verse just preceding that is what Prabhupada calls in the first line of the purport, the regulative principles of knowledge. Prabhupada, like an acharya will do, he used certain phrases again and again and again and again, and so they gathered some meaning because he used them again and again in certain contexts. Like for us, regular principles, we all know what that is, the four regular principles, because he used it again and again. But here he's using the same phrase in relation to knowledge, regular principles of knowledge. And that verse is tapasya, brahmacharjena, samena, demena, ba, jagena satyaso chapyam. So, these are required if one wants to become advanced in knowledge. Samena, dhamena, control of the mind and senses. Well, King Chitraketu was having a problema. He couldn't control his mind. And therefore he couldn't control his senses. And so he had his boohoo experience. His, you know, lamentation, and tortured by lamentation. First not having and then having and losing. You know, the same program of everybody in the material world. Whatever it is that you don't have, you hanker. And whatever you have, it lasts a little while and then it's gone and you lament. Is there something else going on? So, that the regulative principles of knowledge are insufficient according to the flow of those first verses of sixth canto, chapter one. It's necessary but not sufficient or insufficient. And so that's what's happening here. He's attached. So like Lakshmimoni was sharing after class yesterday, Angira, being a teacher, he decided, gee, this man isn't going to get, Chitraketu isn't going to get teachings. He needs something experiential. You know, like turn him upside down and shake him. Bonk him on the head. That's an experience. Woo! And then maybe he can hear. So he's hearing. He's hearing transcendental knowledge. So it's not done yet either. The next chapter is the son speaks. There's a whole other experience. The dead son comes back to life. Narada makes that arrangement. My dear son, your father is boo-hooing over here. He's lamenting like anything. Please, don't cause him that misery and suffering. Bring him, come back and be his son. So the son sits up and imagine what that experience was. His dead son sits up, the one who he was completely attached to. And it's, you read it carefully, he doesn't even look at his father. He looks at Narada. Why'd you bring me back? And who's my father anyway? Who's anybody's father? In a previous life I had another father, and before that another father, before that. So which one is my father? I was with my real father and you brought me back. I'm going back. My real father. See you later. He lies back down. Boy, that was an experience. So education, she'll speak later on this week, I imagine. She can elaborate on this point very nicely. But it's part of the educational process. It's part of passing on transcendental knowledge. It's not only you got a message, in one hand and a hammer in the other hand, and you like hammer the message. So that's one way to do it. But Angira and Narada, they're very flexible and they understand the person and they understand what the person needs to get the message, and the message goes across. But I'd like to go back to the relationship, because the canto begins, and then the Paribhasa Sutra of the canto is addressing the question. The canto begins with the question, what is to be done to prevent persons from having to suffer? Well, specifically, suffer the reactions of sins, but why is sin there? Well, one can say, Prabhupada says, the root cause of suffering is ignorance. So you put some knowledge as the antidote for the ignorance and you get no suffering. But what about the tendency to do again? Even if you know better, to do it again and do it again and do it again. So it has to be pulled out from the root. And that's, where does that ignorance come? It's the misuse of free will. Correct that problem. That's bhakti. So that's, you know, this verse 27, after verse 26, he gives him a mantra. And says, you know, it's just like a real quick verse with no purport. By this mantra, you'll see the personality of Godhead face to face in 7 days. Powerful mantra. Plus, a person whose mind has become detached from the source of misery. The source of misery is this, you know, false ego. It's a misidentification. False ego rules the material mind. One of the things I really like about Kapila Dev's teachings to Devahuti in the third canto is Kapila Dev says, this process of bhakti is the only process which dissolves the material mind. Yay. What a relief. But what's the material mind? The material mind is seeing things, very simple, seeing things separate from their source, Krishna. And spiritual is see things in relation to their source. That's spiritual. So the mind is like a lens. So in this verse, it's tasmat, therefore. So it's tasmat's a nice word. That means sit straight because it's a summary verse. Pay attention, please. It's a summary verse. All the other things, therefore. It's just like in Prabhupada's purports. He'll do that. You know, long purport. And then he says, therefore. So that's like, you know, that's the sutra that's summarizing all the other stuff. Therefore, tasmat. Swasthena manasa. So what does swasthena mean? Swasthena means with a careful mind. Now how can the mind be careful if it's polluted? Answer, it can't. The mind's going to be going here and going there, going there and going there. And we go chasing the mind, thinking, oh, now I'm happy, now I'm sad, now I'm confused, now I'm feeling empty. I'm feeling, you know, whatever different things. This and that. That's the mind that's not pure. Because of attachment to whatever, you know, the object of, and you know, behind the object is, I'm the enjoyer. I want to enjoy. And so we get a material mind. And if you let go of that I want to enjoy thing, independent of Krishna, then the material mind dissolves. Yay! But that's not going to happen. In other words, we'll be beaten up by the mind thinking, now I'm happy, now I'm sad. You know, and that's in this third line, Dvaite. The last line is saying, let go, Chitraketu, of this duality. You know, the duality, happiness, distress. Pleasure, pain. Enjoy, suffer. Let go of it. It's a simultaneous, this is knowledge. That simultaneously, like which comes first, the chicken or the egg? Which comes first, becoming detached or contemplating Brahman? How can you contemplate Brahman if the mind is attached to duality? Answer, you can't. But, you know, it's like Prabhupada says, self-realization and God-realization, they occur simultaneously, like the rising of the sun. So it's dark, it's night. So you hold the mirror in front of yourself, and what do you see? Darkness, you don't see anything. The sun comes up, and there, oh, you can see the sun, you can see yourself, like that. Self-realization, so in the purport, Prabhupada said, within this Krishna consciousness movement, self-realization is included. He's not just talking transcendental knowledge, distinguish matter from spirit. Sankhya, that kind of Sankhya, like chapter 2. chapter 2 Bhagavad Gita. And here with, you know, Angira and Narada, they want to detach the king. Jnana and Vairagya are a couplet throughout the whole of the, especially the Upanishads and the Vedas. Jnana Vairagya. Jnana Vairagya. Knowledge and detachment. Well, what's the fruit of that detachment? Well, if you're an impersonalist, it's, what is it? Become one. It's pervasive, this impersonalism thing. Unless there's association with devotees, that's where it goes. If one gets like, quote, spiritual. Do you remember that session that I remember very clearly, the session that we had when we had our meeting in August, and you know the GBCs had come here, and we had these sessions morning and evening on different topics. And I made the schedule, so I chose to speak last. And it was the Thursday evening, and then those yoga teachers and students came. Remember that? And when it came to questions and answers, it's just a classic, you know. And the same thing that Jayadwaita Maharaj told me. He told me I've heard this Prabhupada story from him 14 times, and he loves telling it. About, you know, the same thing they said in the class was, in the final analysis, it's all one. Or something like that, you know, the goal is to become one. I didn't say what Prabhupada said. Well, our teaching of bhakti and our the oneness is the oneness of love, lover and beloved, and Krishna the beloved, and we're recognizing Krishna as the beloved. So here, so far, this is just like Brahman and Jagat. You know, truth and the temporary, or, you know, the dvaite, temporary, the duality, happy, distress, light, dark, pleasure, pain, detach oneself, dvaite, dhruva, artha, vishramba. Vishrambham is belief. Give up this belief. You know, that's like you hold in your mind the belief that this world of duality is eternal. Well, of course it's not eternal, but we hold the belief that it's eternal. We're holding on to it. Happiness. Eternal happiness. My goodness. It's silly. For a while, a period of time, I was serving with Niranjan Maharaj in Boston, and I think Lakshmimoti was there too. And remember that wonderful era. And Ravindra Sarup and So Domini also came and spent some time serving there. It's very nice. And I didn't go, but a group of devotees went to, you know, one of those exhibits to see, you know, how to present Krishna consciousness. It was, I don't even know which group it was, but they told me what the experience was. It was an experience kind of thing. There's a family sitting at a table. There's Fido. There's the turkey on the table. You know, happy days. And, you know, they finish their meal and they get in the car and they're driving somewhere. And then, you know, it's an accident. It's night. You hear, you know, see the lights coming at. This is, you know, one of those wraparound theater things. You see the lights coming at you and screaming people in the car and the crash of the car. The lights go out. You died. And then, you know, soft classical music. The light comes on, and there they are in heaven, sitting at the table with Fido and the turkey on the table. Because they were Christian, they get to be with their family. Same bodies, same dog, same turkey, same table. Huh? That's what this verse is saying, you know, and Prabhupada is saying in the purport. Due to ignorance, people think that this temporary world is eternal, and it's a place of happiness, and, you know, it's la-la land. And transcendental knowledge that's being passed on by the Srimad Bhagavatam is detach one from that and accept reality. So, you know, the reality of that which is really eternal, and that's the soul is really eternal, and then comes, you know, taking shelter of the Supreme Eternal. That's the next verse. It doesn't elaborate, no purport, and it's coming up. He teaches Narada after transcendental knowledge, like same as the first chapter. After transcendental knowledge comes bhakti. Kichit kevalaya bhaktya. Then it's like Prabhupada's example, you can send a spaceship high, high, high. But if it doesn't take shelter somewhere, eventually it has to come back. I remember Giriraj Maharaj describing to me one of the first classes that he heard Srila Prabhupada speak in Boston, and it was on this topic. Then there was another one about films, and anyway, so it's such a simple message that we don't get, or one doesn't get, when one is attached. You know, or we can even say yes, but not live our life that way. You know, hold on to the attachment, even saying we're saying yes, and hold on to the attachment. It's like one of the offenses against the chanting of the holy name. Maintaining material attachments even after understanding, not just hearing, but understanding so many instructions in the matter. Holding on. Then you don't progress. Even you're chanting Hare Krishna and doing devotional service and Hari Bol Prabhu and all of that. It's necessary to cleanse the mind. That's this first line. Tasmat. Therefore, O King Chitraketu, carefully consider the position of the Atma. In other words, try to understand who you are. Try to understand what is eternal and what isn't eternal. As Prabhupada is saying in the purport, Krishna does the same. They're doing the same. They're just following Krishna. And then, with that mind cleansed with a spiritual conception, at least theoretical. Now, what Prabhupada writes in Bhagavad Gita 241 purport is, you have to go beyond the theoretical to the practical. And he says it very strongly, to the point where there's not even a chance of fruitive activities in pursuit of sense gratification. That's bhakti. Then there's no chance when the tendency is uprooted. And the tendency will only be uprooted through bhakti. So that's what they give next, Narada specifically. Because he's the bearer of the Lord's bhakti shakti. He's a shakti vesha avatar, bearing the fullness of the Lord's bhakti. But he doesn't just like drop it on his head right away. He does other things first, like Prabhupada did with us. I mean, he was giving bhakti, but we didn't recognize it. He was bhakti personified, but people didn't recognize it. So slowly. So just the last point, the as with that tapasya brahmacharjana, same as Rishabhdev teaches, this human form of life is meant for tapodivyam, not just like do things that hurt, tapasya. Live in Chicago and it hurts because it's cold. Go to Florida in the summer, it's too hot. So it's not just, you know, build a circle of fire around you in the heat of the blazing summer. Tapasya. I was visiting a Govinda's restaurant one place. And they had a reading room before the Govinda's restaurant, and on the table were these picture books, And then, of course, then to get people into the books, and then on the shelf was Bhagavad Gita and other things. So picture book. Here's a picture of yogis. So one was this guy, a yogi. Big circle of fire, blazing fire in the heat of the summer. And when you're really hot, you don't put a circle of fire around you. You get a fan or something. Or then the next picture was Gangotri with this big yogi with his beard floating on the, and ice in all directions, just like, you know, his arms outstretched. Tapasya. Then the next picture was a yogi lying on a big cactus slab. And it wasn't just like little prickers, it was these big ones. Ouch. Tapasya. According to Bhagavad Gita, that's austerity in the mode of ignorance. It's parsing the elements of the body. For what? For detachment. And, you know, his little bowl there so people would give him money, he could maintain himself that way. The teaching of Rishabhdev is tapo divyam. Whatever you do for the purpose of satisfying the Supreme, whatever it is that's satisfied, whatever it is for satisfying the Supreme. And it can be this, and it can be that, and we have our different natures, and some like this, and some like that. So we can connect our nature with what is pleasing to the Supreme, but the higher principle is what is pleasing to the Supreme, whether it's pleasing to us or not, according to our nature or not. That's when bhakti really awakens, and then that's the standard, by the way, of the purport of 6.1.15, as Jiva Goswami comments on that verse, that the standard just before spontaneous love is where one just desires service, of course, for Krishna. And then spontaneous, anything. Outpouring from the heart. So one needs to come to that position gradually. So there's these steps that are described in the Bhagavatam, and in this story, this whole Chitraketu story, is illustrating those earlier verses of chapter 1, including the Kechit Kevalya Bhaktya. And he's getting this benediction. It's no small thing. It's actually the essence. He's getting this benediction from Narada. You'll meet the Supreme Lord face to face in 7 days. Ta-da! So by descending mercy comes through such personalities. Of course, Chitraketu was, other than being attached to having a son, he was a highly qualified person. Otherwise it wouldn't have happened so quickly. But along with Narada's benediction, it happened very quickly. So we'll hear some more next chapter about Lord Sankarshan and his beautiful form and the exchange between King Chitraketu and the Supreme Lord. Hare Krishna. Any discussion or questions? Yes. Yeah? You do.
Why Angira gave, Narada Muni gave Chitraketu a mantra to Lord Sankarshan instead of Lord Krishna?
Why not? Oh. He's a Sankarshan Bhakta.
Thank you.
He says, there's no explanation of exactly why. The great sage Narada continued, "My dear king, attentively receive from me a mantra which is most auspicious." Okay, next verse. "My dear king, in former days, Lord Shiva and other devotees took shelter of the lotus feet of Lord Sankarshan."
Hare Krishna. Two things. One is that I was there for that exhibition. It was actually an exhibition.
Which one?
The one with Fido and and the family that got in the car accident and then...
Oh, you were with that group.
Yeah. So
Did I describe it properly?
Yes, you did. But it was an exhibition, and it was quite funny because somebody asked a question. There was someone there. We went to a Mormon thing. It was a Mormon, you know, place, and they had all these different exhibitions, and that was one of them.
Okay.
And so that was like at the top, the pinnacle. There it is, you know, Joe and Mary and Fido and the turkey, and they're all in the spiritual world. So someone asked, actually a 13-year-old girl asked, well, the question I have is, what if they would have gotten the car accident when, like, they were 85? Would they be now sitting in their 85?
Invalid in a rocking chair.
Would they get their 85-year-old body, or did they get the body that they had when they got all smashed in the car? Or where does it, you know, they pick the 23-year-old body, which body do they get? So the lady said, that's a very good question, but I don't know the answer, I'll have to ask. And so she left, and when she came back, they threw us out. They asked us to leave. They didn't answer the question, and they just asked us to leave. And you think, oh, glorious to Srila Prabhupada, because they just don't have, you know, the answers. And they make up something so it seems very pleasant, but they really don't know anything.
They're really strong values in family.
Right.
So strong that when you go to the good place, you're with your same family.
Yeah, but you're frozen in time.
And it's like this idea of rising from the dead, you know, the second coming of Christ, people that are in their grave, it's just like bones in a casket. They're going to rise from the dead and, you know, whatever they're going to do. It's so silly. It's just like so silly. Anyway, go ahead.
Anyways, I thought I'd share that because it was really, it always remains with me over many years that happening because it was so funny. It was very telling, more than funny, it was very telling. The idea of controlling the mind or getting to the point where one can control the mind, developing control of the mind. And of course we know intellectually that by engaging in devotional service, one kind of tries to override the pushings of the mind. Krishna says it can be done by constant practice and detachment, which is a whole other thing. And so we're hopeful, you know, we go through the process and the mind keeps bugging us and we keep overriding it and moving forward, or hopefully moving forward. and it's not as easy as it sounds when we talk about it, to do it. Did you notice that? Maybe for you it's easy. Okay. But for some of us, it's not so easy.
Okay.
We often, it's like the whole existence in this body is an experiential learning thing arranged by Krishna to teach us a lot of lessons. Someone asked Bhojan Prabhu once, how do you become humble? And Bhojan said, live life. Life will make you humble. But the saints come into our lives and they try to speed up the process, hence the name accelerated learning. They try to not make us go through so many lessons, so many lives, and teach us quickly. But despite the lessons, we tend to learn for a short period of time and then regress. And I'm wondering why we're asked in Varnashram to enter into situations which appear to provide opportunity for developing attachment as a remedy for attachment. That makes sense?
Yes, I understand your question. It's a lesser intelligent position. And for people who have less, like, you know, like Luke's not here, but the question from yesterday about, you know, hearing and you understand. Hearing, you don't understand, you see, then you understand. Hearing, you don't understand. See, you don't understand. You experience. Ooh. So, it's vast. It's just here. That's first class intelligence. What if you don't have first class intelligence? Well, we have a plan for you. Not you, but you know, such persons.
Hopefully wish that you can have first class intelligence if you push yourself beyond what appears to be your capacity. And well, then
that's a surrender issue, isn't it? What one can be empowered beyond one's limitations by Krishna's empowerment, but that takes surrender. Well, I got 1 foot in this boat, 1 foot in that boat. I'm trying to cross the river. Yeah. Jagatananda Pandit advises, don't do that. But some people do that. And so that's the Daivi Varnashram program. And yes, it's a risk. I mean, you know, for example, entering into household life. Why do it? Just everyone should be sannyas. Men and women. So there's an arrangement for propensity and propensity that's sanctioned by Krishna, and that person can advance as swiftly, although there's certainly risk, as you pointed out, to become attached. Certainly there's risk to become attached. It's like Uttanapada and his brother Priyavrata. Priyavrata was saying, no, I don't want to become the emperor. Why? Well, I'll have to have a queen, and I'll have to have wealth, and I'll get attached. Brahma said, yes, you will get attached. But I give you the benediction. You'll become free from that attachment. He got attached.
Can you give me that benediction, please?
I'm not Lord Brahma. Sorry, Charlie.
Because it seems like the opportunity for attachment is all-pervading, even in sannyas. You know, it's everywhere.
Everywhere. So therefore, you know, the formula, by definition, of Lord Chaitanya for renunciation is yukta vairagya. But you know, wait a minute, yukta vairagya, there's the opportunity for attachment. Utilize something, and it's not for the sake of attachment, it ends up in attachment, unless one is very careful. And the same thing can exist in any ashram, in any varna.
Like an iPad or an iPhone, right? You use it in Krishna's service, and then you get attached, or if you get attached, it can take you to hell and back in 4 seconds.
Yeah.
Right in the middle of your japa. So, you know, it's such a dangerous thing. And we don't have the opportunity to not do those things. We have to function in this world. So yeah. It's a very dangerous situation.
Human life is a life of responsibility, and there's no way around it. We have to be responsible. Response-able. We choose our responses. And if one wants a life where you don't choose responses, it's animal life. A human life is we choose. We choose wisely. Is there risk? You bet. Do it this way, do it that way, do it the other way. There's risk. So there's risk. So there's risk in Varnashram. There's risk in having a body. It's a risk. It's peril. We have to use it anyways. Use it responsibly. You have a question?
Hare Krishna. Maharaj, this is a question based on yesterday's class.
Okay.
And I think you did cover a lot of it in today's class, but somehow the question is still in my head, so I just wanted to get a deeper understanding. So there was a statement yesterday that in the purport that the whole material creation is a mental concoction or something like that.
Something like that, yeah.
I don't remember. So I've been trying to understand that in the context of, you know, my life as an aspiring devotee, trying to practice and all that. So we also hear the statement that devotee, you know, relationships are eternal. This, you know, the relationships are eternal, and you know, the process is eternal. So my question is, when I am interacting with, you know, the other devotees, or maybe not my family members or the people in my life, and I'm interacting, how do I discern between what is the mental concoction component of my, of whatever I'm experiencing versus what is real? How do I,
well, unless you're on a transcendental platform, it's going to be projection. Unless you're on the transcendental platform, it's going to be projection. You're going to be like, this is my son, this is my husband, this is my father, this is my sister. And, you know, way to the next chapter, who's my father? You know, what are these bodily relationships? Or, you know, say it the other way. Like this exhibition at the Mormon, whatever it was. You know, it's not that. What is it? Well, you know, if the relationships are eternal, it's not going to be, you know, in Goloka Vrindavan, Gorgovinda is going to be your son. You'll have some, there'll be some relationship, but you know what's going to be. Krishna knows. You don't. Unless you're on a transcendental platform. So, temporarily, you're serving according to the relationship, you know, mother and son, and wife and husband, and etc., etc., sister and sister. You serve accordingly, according to your, you know, situation. And that changes. You're going to get older. And then you'll be like, you know, grandma Ananda Vrindavan, you know, giving advice, like, you know, like Lakshmimoni, teaching people about, from the wisdom of her experience of Krishna consciousness. You know, her children are grown up, and, you know, so she's not got a whole bunch of other children, all of us, giving Krishna, giving wisdom. So, you know, these scenarios of life will change as, you know, just time keeps moving those things along. In the course of all of that, most important is transcendence is attachment goes to Krishna. Not just like finishing your 16 rounds and putting your bead back. But, you know, attachment to Krishna. Attachment to Krishna, that's the goal. It doesn't happen like that. It happens gradually. And when there's attachment to Krishna, then the transcendental dimension of relationships, at least the possibility is that that becomes illumined for you. Until then, it's, I'm serving according to my duties that are suitable for my situation. I'm in a woman's body. I have a son. I take care of my son with love and affection. But that's not eternal. You know, we heard it in this chapter. We hear it again.
So my conception changes about the people
yes.
around me. That's what is
yes.
a shift.
Yes. The spiritual conception starts to emerge, and the material conception starts to fade. It doesn't mean you know, then you become negligent. It means you see the transcendental nature while you're doing your worldly duties. And, you know, it directly it's proportionate to the attachment to Krishna. Well, you know, we're not there yet. We're doing the practice part till we get to that stage. Donna Kelly has something.
Just as a follow-up to Lakshmimoni's question.
Okay.
So you were mentioning that first-class intelligence, second, third, fourth-class
yeah.
intelligence,
yeah.
that why would somebody choose a varna or an ashram or whatever situation in life that involves more risk of attachment, material attachment, that would be a signal that person's of lesser
no.
quality intelligence.
No. If that came out of, you know, it seemed to be implied, no. That's not what I meant to say. We have our nature, and it's intelligent to act according to your nature. And if my nature is, if I tried to be a householder, I'd be a big flop. And if someone that's a householder tried to be a sannyasi, they'd be a big flop. It wouldn't be intelligent. One should act according to one's nature. And then it's, you know, the activity will, so, but both require the hearing. If I take up the position of being a householder, and my hearing is not strong, I'll be a flop. If I take up the position of a sannyasi, I'm detached, and I don't properly engage myself in hearing, I'll be a flop. So, the first class intelligence doesn't mean, the negation part. It's what's my situation, what's appropriate for me. That's first class intelligence, by hearing. Okay, thank you. Okay. Karuna Nidhi, last question.
Maharaj, I could not understand the last line of translation. Last line of the translation.
Last line of the translation.
Yeah, that Prabhupada wrote is eternal. That word refers to what? Which word is eternal? Prabhupada wrote is eternal in that sentence.
What's eternal? Let's read the sentence.
Yeah.
You. Well, let's go back. Try to understand your real position in this way, and then you'll be able to give up your unnecessary attachment, Jnana Vairagya. You will also be able to give up the belief, that's this word, Vishrambham. Yeah? Vishrambham. Give up your belief that this material world, or anything not directly in touch with service to Krishna, is eternal. It's a belief. Do you want to know the explanation? What does it mean? It's the belief that asat is sat. You know, this is my wife. This is my child. This is eternal. Like, you know, the thing, the Mormon exhibition. Or, like this other example, it's just like, it's really funny. Or, as you say, telling. And the second coming of Christ, all those people that are Christian and they're, you know, bones in a casket, they're going to rise from the dead and, you know, celebrate eternal life when the second coming of Christ. Then that's a nice question, you know, supposing somebody dies when they're 85. So that's like, they're going to be 85 forever? And then someone that died when they're 15, they're going to be 15 forever. And so many other irrational things. So many. So that's the Vishrambham, the belief that the temporary is eternal. When that shelter is taken, shelter in Brahman or transcendence, the mind is then freed from those misconceptions or that belief that the temporary is eternal. Hari Bol, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.